You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate baseball.
Welcome into Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective. I'm Dave Richmond along for ladies and gentlemen, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, man?
What's going on, guys? This has been the weekend from hell for me. Not for the Pirates, though. Nice weekend for the Pirates.
No question. And Bubba Rosenbaum is Team Mickey. He's spending time with his family. Well-deserved vacation in at Disney World. So he's off this week. But Bubba, we miss you, man. And definitely ride Space Mountain for me. Ladies and gentlemen with us right now, I don't know if you've ever been to Disney World, but Corey Glure, the play-by-play voice of the ECU Baseball Pirates. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I've been to Disney World twice in my life, once in third grade and then about 10 years ago, I think I went. It's been a bit, but I've been to Orlando since, just haven't been able to get out there.
I haven't even been to the state of Florida, if you guys can believe it. For whatever reason, just never had any desire to go to Disney World or a reason to go to Florida.
Well, there you go.
I get it.
Yeah, I would like to go, before we talk baseball, we'll talk about visiting the state of Florida. I would like to go down to St. Augustine, and I probably sometime soon.
Yes,
Orlando doesn't appeal to me.
Well, by the way, I want to remind fans, our great show is brought to you by Next Level Training Center. I want everybody to know that. It's a great place. If you haven't been there, I urge you to go there. It's a great place to get lots of expertise when it comes to the instruction with Trent Brenton Company, a lot of great coaches, instructors. Just go to nextleveltc.com. They've got a great Facebook page. Brian Packer, Alec Burleson, a lot of former Pirate players and current players has come through the ranks there. You can give them a call for more information, 252-756-NEXT, 252-756-NEXT. And then we had a brief appearance there with Bubba.
Bubba's running.
Bubba's trapped in. He's trapped in It's a Small World and needs help.
we'll help you, Bubba, for sure. But anyway, Corey, actually, we're very excited for the Pirates. 4-0 this week. And is there anything for Pirate fans to complain about? I mean, we win the games and we move on.
Yeah, that's how I would approach it. They not just won the games. They looked, especially this weekend, looked great doing it. And I think the second half of the game in Durham last week was this team really buckling down and pushing their muscle a little bit. But, I mean, I'm not going to tell fans how they should respond to games, like if they want to find something to go after over the last four games this week, go for it. But I can tell you that this four game stretch here, and certainly this weekend, that's about as solid as this team has played all year.
Yeah, Corey, I mean, it's still early, and you know, we're certainly not peaking yet. But you know, if we just keep getting better and better and better as the season goes, and as the level we're playing at right now in March, if we can. You know, Cliff Godwin teams typically have paid better at the end of the year. So, you know, that's all I'll say.
I mean, it's hard not to like so much about what we just saw over the last few days in Charlotte that you can start thinking. I think it's easy to start thinking bigger after what happened this weekend. The words I'll put out there is, we're 15 games in, and the season is still in its infancy. So let this play out and see just what more this club could be capable of, because what they've shown us here thus far has been pretty exciting to watch and exciting to think about just what they could do.
No doubt. And one thing that, you know, we talked to Coach O about last week, and, you know, no midweek games after we get in the conference play. We're going to be playing four-game conference series, and you would think with our pitching staff, playing four-game conference series with no midweek games could really play in our favor in conference.
Yeah, I think they figured heading in, once that conference schedule was set in stone, that they were built to handle four-game weekends. And now I think this is the first weekend where you saw what that could potentially look like play out, because you had your three starting pitchers pitch very well this weekend, and then you have what you would assume would be your fourth starting pitcher in Gavin Williams pitch great out of the bullpen for the second weekend in a row. And so that you can kind of see the formation of what might come with this pitching rotation once conference play begins in, I guess that's three weekends away at this point. So I think that they understand what's coming up in a few weeks. And this weekend was really the first showcase for that, for these four pitchers that, against a very good, very hard hitting lineup, that all four of them had great moments over the course of the weekend that I think can translate pretty well in the league play.
Corey, before we jump into this weekend, take a brief look back. You said before the show that it felt like in Durham against Duke Tuesday night, felt like forever ago. But we'll talk briefly about the performance against the Blue Devils Tuesday night.
Yeah, it honestly feels like it happened ages ago. And I think the first half of that game was such a wild ride where each team just kept trading each other and no one could find a way out. And then you get CJ Mayhew to come in out of the bullpen, and that seemed to settle things down a little bit after the Pirates seemed, I mean, it's weird when you go to multiple pitchers, which you do in midweek, and if one guy struggles, like Spivey struggled at the start, and then the next guy in works a little bit harder to try and make up for that, and then it just keeps on going. So the fact that CJ Mayhew was able to kind of break the inertia of that and settle the game down in front of literally nobody. And that actually caught me more off guard than I was expecting, because I had heard there weren't going to be people in that building. And I think we might have discussed this a little bit. But the fact that the only people in the stands were about a dozen scouts in a ballpark that seats 9,000 people, that was much bigger of an adjustment, I think. Certainly for me, but I also think for that team. And also knowing that the only people that were watching that game were people that might have your future in their hands. And so that you can press pretty easily in scenarios like that. And I think that happened on the mound in the first half of that game. So to have CJ Mayhew, who's been through that already in his early life, dealing with discussing, you know, contracts and all that stuff, getting drafted by Seattle, to have him come in and say, all right, we're good. Like, I'm going to settle things down, and then getting that offense going and breaking that five all tie with Connor Norby. That just kind of that back half of that ball game was great to see in an environment that was truly unusual.
Well, now, why were there no fans in attendance? Are they not enforcing or allowing the 30% capacity there? Or?
No, it's a Duke rule. The university, even though they're playing off campus, it is a Duke athletics rule that they're not letting even families into athletic events across the board. And now with the last few days with the, you know, Duke basketball had to close up and now they're done for the year in that conference tournament. And the campus has now put everyone on lockdown for, I think, another week. Like, they have to stay where they are because cases are starting to grow on their campus. So the Durham Bulls, from what everything we heard on Tuesday, the Durham Bulls gave the okay to bring fans in for Duke events. And Duke is staying firm on their no fan policy, no family policy. They're only people that were actually there to watch the game that weren't scouts. Duke had some of their family members get into the restaurants above the left field wall that's about the road and were able to watch from the patio. And that was it. Those are the only people that were able to see the game unless you're a professional scout. So that's Duke was given the okay. So yeah, you can have people come in, but they're staying hard and firm about not letting folks in.
With apologies to their wonderful medical school and their hospital, somebody needs to put that school in New Jersey where it belongs.
Stop. The problem what they need to do, including East Carolina, our own university, is you're going to keep having outbreaks until everybody's vaccinated. It's a business. And it's silly that people are supposed to be well-educated and running our universities. They should know better than not to vaccinate all the students. They said they were going to do that, and the governor even told them ahead of time to vaccinate all the students. When you have kids living in dorms, And look at the outbreak Greenville had in August. We had to deal with that at where I work at my daytime job. A huge outbreak when the kids came back. Of course, they have parties. They're not going to wear a mask. They need to go ahead and be vaccinated. It's a no-brainer.
Well, I think I've done some work over the last couple of months with the county health department and assisting with their vaccination efforts. And so I've been able to kind of get a behind-the-scenes look at what's been going on here. I want to be careful with saying that I do think the dormitories do now fall under one of the eligible groups because it counts the congregate housing structure. And that is now part of, I think it was part of, essentially they lumped it into the pre-existing condition group, which is now eligible. Right. And so, but, you know, right now I think universities are going through the debate of, can they organize something for their student population? And they can't force their students to do it. They can make them available, but they can't make, if people don't want to get the vaccine, it's their right. And so, you know, the fact that it's a very tricky situation. You also, you're dealing with the university, then how do they administer and how do they decide who is, you know, above someone else in terms of a student rank? You know, do you go to athletes first? Do you go to, you know, students in your science department first? You know, I mean, that's a challenging scenario here that I don't think universities are fully equipped to handle. And so right now it essentially is universities are telling students, if you're at least 18, which the cutoff is 16 or 18, depending on the vaccine.
Right.
If you are eligible, if you are a frontline worker, you're free to go get it. I don't know if they have the capability to organize everything for their student population. They can do stuff for staff, but for student population, that's a different deal. In terms of Duke not letting people in, I mean, that's also their call. And the relationship with Duke and the Durham Bulls has been a unique one over the years. At times it's felt frosty over the years. And so, the fact that they're given the okay and Duke said no is frankly not a major surprise. I don't think it's a, you know, trading barb sort of situation with the Bulls, but it's been a tricky balance between those two since Duke started playing there. And so I think what it shows over Tuesday, I mean, listen, Duke's been used to playing that this year and you could tell it didn't really faze them. But I think what it shows that eventually that program needs to renovate their on-campus facility and get back on campus. And then they'll have more control over what they can do. Jack Coombs Field is not suitable for what they want to do. And Chris Pollard has pushed to get that stadium renovated. He's done some things there, but not a lot. And, you know, they have the money to do it. It's Duke Athletics. Just getting the passion behind it in order for it to occur, that's been a hurdle that he's trying to jump over. And that program's good enough now where they should be able to get enough together to put that in place. Once they get that done, they can separate from the DBAP, then that program, I think, will be where Chris Pollard wants it to be. Right now, it's not. So you have situations like Tuesday where there seem to be a couple of forces butting heads.
So what about, let's talk about the game some more, and then we'll move on to the weekend with Charlotte. What were your takes with, you said, obviously, with the pitching starting to finally get better there. The second half of the game, it was like almost a tale of two games, right?
Yeah, it really, I mean, that felt like two games in one. It initially had the look of a pretty normal midweek game where just all of a sudden a whole bunch of runs are piling up and no one could find enough outs to get through a Franklin. And then it calmed down because then the Pirate pitching, which they had the advantage heading into that matchup over Duke on the depth of their pitching staff. That's the one question Duke has, is whether or not they could find pitching this year to contend where they have been over the last few years. And it came through on Tuesday that right now they don't. And East Carolina does. So the fact that they, you know, Spivey struggled, Kimmel struggled, Wilson struggled, your first three pitchers that day. So you go to a tried and true guy in CJ Mayhew, and he goes 3+ innings, and he allows the waters to calm in that game. And after Duke tied it, they tied it in the fourth. We noticed it from our position because our booth is at first base in the DBAP, and the Pirate dugout's right in front of us. So we saw everyone come together in the dugout for essentially an in-game team meeting. And whatever was said there was just, all right, let's reset the gears here a little bit and let's go play the baseball that we're capable of playing. And then they threw a shutout the rest of the way and they played it six more runs and won the game. So they were able to essentially flush the first four innings out, despite the fact that it was a tie game and they didn't trail at all over the course of the night. They were able to flush that out and just go out there and play baseball again. And that was, again, I think the environment played a part initially in that first bulk of the game of just being so out of character that they were able to just reset, refocus, and win yet another one over Duke.
No question. Then, so nice road win there. And by the way, want to mention that ECU both won at Clark LeClaire and the DBAP. So technically, I guess you could, can you call that a sweep? I know it's two different games, but
season sweep. Yeah. Season sweep at Duke. So, and it's something they've become good at in the last, 8-10 years is somehow winning games constantly over Duke. It's an oddity, I think, of the sport that Duke's a good enough program to not, have dropped 20 of 21 to one program over the last, decade, but that's the run that the Pirates are on right now. So they have a season sweep over a team that still, I think, has an opportunity to make some severe damage in the ACC, even though they weren't able to play this weekend.
Every time I hear about winning 20 of 21 against Duke, or before that was 19 of 20 or whatever, I always have in the back of my mind, please God, don't let us see them in the postseason, because you know what's going to happen.
It'll revert. Yeah, right. It's just the karma thing, right?
Yep. We'll worry about that later on. Pirates get that nice win on the road in Durham and then come back home and we get out the brooms again. It's something that I know Pirate fans are used to, but a lot of sweeps over the last few years, starting off with Friday night's game. What did you think?
Friday night was an entertaining one. I thought Jay Kuchmaner looked very sharp and, by and large, very in command of the proceedings. And I think for him to get his first Friday night start, it's been warranted for a while. But coming off of a bit of a sloppier outing against Appalachian the week before, he was really carving on Friday. And that changeup, the changeup was a key pitch really throughout this weekend when you look at this matchup. And his changeup really got things going, where he was just able to slice and dice the Charlotte lineup really from start to finish. I mean, he ran into trouble with David McCabe. His first home run of that game tied the game, but then he got out of the two-on jam right after that to keep the game tied. He got out of a jam in the first inning right off the bat to keep it a scoreless game. He just knows how to, I guess, focus in on the, minute tasks at hand. All right, he gave up a home run to McCabe. A lot of folks have so far this year. And so then he just went right back at, and there was only one time where he really seemed animated and really frustrated with what was going on. That was in the sixth, when there was a very late time call offered up at home plate. And the ball was out of his hand when it was offered up. And so he was visibly screaming at the umpire. And then he started stalking around the mound. Like he looked like a caged animal. And then he eventually left in that frame. But he's a guy that knows how to manage the situation. And for him to get the Friday night start and manage his way through that lineup as surgically as he did, that was great to see.
No question about it. And with Cooch, obviously, guys, the thing that's interesting with me, we talk about it, it seems like every week, Corey, with you, but the pitching staff, I was thinking about that. I know that it's talented. You can argue how deep it is this year, but the senior-led pitchers is something that I was really thinking about this afternoon, listening to you, and the very fact that these guys have a ton of experience, I think that'll bode well for us in May and June.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Kuchmaner as a fourth-year guy. Talk about Gavin Williams as a fourth-year guy. You talk about Tyler Smith, who's a fifth-year guy. And those are going to be three of your starting pitchers moving forward. Add into Carson Wisenhunt, who's pitching like a fourth-year guy. And now you have a rotation that is just almost near impossible to break through constantly on. You might get one of them, but to get all three of them, and they all pitch differently. They are all different types of pitchers. There's not, you know, you have two left-handers, two right-handers, but one left-hander has heat, the other one has movement. One right-hander has heat, the other one has sink. And so there's no one way you can go after this pitching staff right now. And now they all, with the exception of Wisenhunt, have logged so many innings and so many experiences, and there's not a type of game they haven't been in yet, that whatever you throw at them, they're ready for it. And the one who hasn't been in that has shown the ability to brush up any sort of minor adversity that's come his way thus far.
And that's going to be, obviously, pitching is so huge. Also, the bats. I know that Coach Godwin said in the post-game press conference, I want to ask you this, Corey, that the bats, the offense is still not there. He's the hitting coach. What are things that can be done to help with the offensive side of the ball, so to speak?
Well, I think he said that after today's game. Correct. He felt today it looked a little tired. And so he said, so he might have to kind of readjust a little bit when it comes to final games of the weekend. But by and large, the first two games of this series, I thought they were fine. And even Saturday, when Bryce McGowan was pitching, I just thought Bryce McGowan was pitching his tail off. And so he was locked in a pitcher's duel, and that's what happens. You have opportunities, and a pitcher comes in and slams the door. I thought they looked great on Friday. Like, I didn't think there were any issues at all with what this offense did in the Friday night game, nor was I that, you know, I didn't think Saturday was a very frustrating outing at the yard either. Today was a different case, and so they will look back at how things transpired today and see, all right, why did we look a little bit sluggish today as opposed to looking as solid as we did Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday. So, you know, they got a couple days to figure that out. And, you know, it could be as simple as they've looked good over the last couple of games. And so they went in and, you know, this kind of took a little bit of an easy approach heading into this game. Could be the fact that everyone lost an hour of sleep. Could be the fact that they just couldn't figure out today's pitcher right away. And so there could be a multitude of factors about why today was not the crisp offense that we saw the rest of the weekend. But by and large, I didn't find too many issues with how this lineup has been performing here of late.
What about with Wisenhunt? By the way, folks, we're going to have the PGX player of the game. I wonder who that could be. And the PGX pitcher of the game. I wonder who that could be. We'll have that in just a little while with Corey. But as far as pitching is concerned on Saturday's game with Wisenhunt moving up to Saturday, his pitching is incredible at being how young he is, Corey.
I know that was his best outing so far because it was the first one where every time he took the mound, the game was in the balance. And the fact that he shut down this lineup, you know, he's pitched great this whole year. He pitched great at Georgia Southern. That was a terrific outing for him. But every time he was on the hill, he had to set the tone for Bryce McGowan to answer and trading back and forth. And those two were up. I mean, that was a heavyweight fight. And it was a blast to watch just from our booth. There was an astounding pitching matchup. I mean, he went, the book was clearly out for the Charlotte lineup that changeups were an issue. And that Jay Kuchmaner at the start Friday changed him up all the time. The very first inning for Carson Wisenhunt, he strikes out a pair. It's with the changeup. And he kept going back to the change and back to the change. And Charlotte could not figure it out. That's what Bryce McGowan was doing Saturday as well. The Pirates had a lot of trouble with his changeup. And so it almost became, probably if you're listening to our broadcast all 3 days, you probably got sick of myself and Coach O talking about that pitch, but it was such the key element to that whole weekend playing out. The fact that Carson Wisenhunt, whose fastball can get to 94, 95, and that was maybe his third pitch on Saturday. It was change up and then his curveball and then the fastball. To pitch backwards against that lineup in a scoreless game into the sixth inning and win that pitcher's duel as a freshman against a guy in Bryce McGowan who has been around for a couple of years and has been one of the nation's most improved pitchers this year. That was his best outing of his career thus far.
And by the way, Carson Wisenhunt, yeah, I was just going to say this real fast. He had 7 innings pitched on Saturday, 0 runs, 3 hits, 9 strikeouts, 2 walks. I mean, that's so incredible to be that young. But we heard that back in the fall. I know the preview, you were talking about how you were hearing great things about him. We did our preview with you a month or two ago, and here we are in the season, and he's doing very well.
Not just very well. I mean, he's one of the more impressive pitchers going right now in college baseball as a freshman, second year, but freshman. He's got 36 strikeouts and 6 walks in 4 starts. There are veteran pitchers that are seeking that level of production. The fact that this kid is just setting the world on fire right now, and he moves up a day to do it as well. He loses one day of prep, and he goes against arguably the best pitcher he has opposed thus far and wins that duel is, you know, it's hard not to get really excited about what he could do for this program and after he leaves this program.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, speaking of Saturday's game, Corey, have you, in all the games you called, have you ever had a home run for you quite as much as that one Saturday there late in the game?
That one was something else. The Norby, we had just spoken that broadcast earlier about how home runs to dead center field are very rare in that park. And then Norby hits one to dead center field, but it sounded good off the bat.
Yeah.
But the way Jay Cunningham, the center fielder, played it, it looked like a standard shallow pop fly to left center. And then all of a sudden, it's like the controller got plugged back in. And all of a sudden, he was racing back to the wall. And then he just kept going and going, and then it was gone. That was certainly one of the strangest home runs I've ever seen. I'm not surprised that it happened, especially with the guy who hit it. But the fact that, a play happened later on in that game. That home run was in the 6th. And a play happened, it was in the 8th inning, top of the 8th inning, where Dragum, the shortstop, hit a fly ball to center, and Bryson World has completely lost it, and it dropped in front of him because it got overcast late in that game in the twilight hour. The ball became very hard to see in the outfield, and that had to have been what got Cunningham on that home run. It turned out he wouldn't have had a play on it, but he certainly fooled everybody in that park, unless you were somehow had an angle on just watching that ball fly to dead center field. And again, that's rare for it to happen at Clark Eclair. It was very hard to find someone who knew that one was going out. Even Connor Norby looked a little bit unsure once he left home plate. And then he said, oh, hey, this one's going away, isn't it?
Hey, Corey, by the way, guys, we have comments. So if you have your question or comment and you're watching live on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter, then you can put them up in the comments section. And we'll start off with Josh O'Neill said, great series. Go Pirates. Love being in the jungle once again. And then a guy that's a Disney World, Team Disney, Bubba, chimes in. He wants to know, the inquiring minds want to know, Corey, we must know, why did you decline your NIT invitation?
Yes, I did just tweet out prior to the show that I will not be heading to the NIT in solidarity with St. John's, who just announced that they will not be going to the NIT this year. I just don't feel like going down to Texas at the moment. Gonna let that play out for a bit. I'm scheduled to be there in about a month. And so I will let another program take my NIT position this year.
All right, we have another question from Bubba, who's chiming in, our great producer, statistician, social media director. He does it all behind the scenes. He's Team Disney this week. Corey, talk about the web gym of Agnos on Saturday and some of the other things you won't see in box scores, like World taking third with Niners sleeping. That was really interesting.
Yeah. First of all, can I just ask Bubba a question? Like, I appreciate him tuning in and still wanting to be a part of the program that he has worked together with you two on. But he's in Disney World. Go hang out with Pluto, bud. Like, go ride the Star Wars thing. Like,
Space Mountain.
Yeah, you're a Space Mountain guy. I have a big Thunder Mountain Railroad guy.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah,
go, I like go check too. Out Pandora. Like, go hang out with, I don't know, Donald Duck. But
go drink, Bubba, go drink a beer question, somewhere. How about that?
Yeah, go to Downtown Disney.
Downtown Disney, right? Yeah.
Yeah, go drink wine at France's Pavilion. Like,
they got a McDonald's in Orlando that has pizza.
Oh, well, I didn't
know
that.
Don't go do that. Don't.
Yeah. You'll get McDonald's pizza, Bubba.
No.
But to answer Bubba's inquiry, that double play on Saturday was great. And for a team that hasn't turned a ton of double plays this year, that was a liner behind the third base bag and deep. And Agnos is able to, one, get in front of it, two, glove it. And then by the time he got that ball, it looked as though he maybe had a shot at one. And that play was to first. But he went to second instead. And the throw was low. It was probably about ankle high that Norby was able to grab on the fly and get the force out. And then you think, all right, they got that out. And then Norby made the turn. And it kind of clicks in your head. They're trying this, huh? And then to be able to complete that double play, that's about as far as a double play can be thrown from 5-4-3. Like, it was truly line to line. And the pick and the set and the throw by Agnos, the fastball that was gloved right off the shoelaces by Norby, and then stretch by Moylan. That was a 5-4-3 double plays don't get much saucier than that one. That was special. And then I thought Bryson Worrell had a great weekend. And I mean, he is aware, and everyone's aware of the talk and the focus on him heading into this season and the struggles it's been for him this season. The first two games of this series, he didn't hit a homer. He came close, but he was aboard all the time, and he was wreaking havoc when he was on. The Pirates wanted to try and get the base running going here this year against Charlotte, like they did last year. They stole 15 bases against Charlotte last year. Different team this year, so they weren't able to get that fluidity going. But when Bryson was on, the point was made. He's going to go, and he is going to take third if you're not looking. He stole 4 bases this weekend. Like, I mean, it was great to see him just look more comfortable. Like, I mean, to look better at the plate, to look more composed, to not swing at every off-speed that he got, which has been a thing for him. And in a series that was dictated by off-speed pitches, he was not, you know, playing catch-up with those, and he was not in front of any of those. So it was great to see him get back on base, because we've all been hoping for it, and he's been hoping for it. And so hopefully that's a sign of things to come. And things like taking third when the infield's not paying attention. That's a sign of East Carolina really feeling confident about how they are playing offensively. And they're able to snake out an extra base when you're not looking. And Bryson's at the top of the list of being able to do it.
No question. By the way, we have some comments from Pirate Al. Alan Powell, let's put those up. Then Kyle, if you have a question, chime in. Ton of talent on this team. We could have 3 potential first-round picks. And, of course, he's talking about Wisenhunt, Gavin, and Norby. And he said he's glad that we have Wiz next year.
Yep, that's a good thing to be happy about, Alan. That is probably a wise assessment. I think everyone kind of figured Gavin Williams would be in that mix in terms of that high of a draft pick with just his body, his makeup, and then the stuff he's able to back it up with. We mentioned this in the broadcast today. It seems like every time Connor Norby is at the plate, you can almost hear him moving up around. Like, I mean, it's that level of what he's doing right now, where he might have started in the, you know, hypothetically, I mean, I'm not in tune with any scouts. Coach O is very much in tune with scouts. But say he started in the 30s in terms of rounds for draft picks, maybe a little bit higher because he's a fourth or a third year guy. But since the season has started, it's gone 29, 28, 27, 26. And now you're talking about, you know, you're talking about top 5 round pick right now with what he has done. Is this sustainable? Well, it's hard to say otherwise with what he's shown us now 15 games in, and the fact that he can have an 0-4 night on Friday and still finish the series with 5 hits and a couple of homers. But it is hard not to see just every time he steps up, just the impact that he's been having on this team and the impact that he is having on himself for his professional career, because he's the best hitter in baseball right now. And there are other guys who have higher batting averages, and I haven't seen all the guys around the country, but I mean, his home runs this weekend were to dead center, hardest part of the park to hit one, and opposite way with the wind blowing in from right field today. He went oppo in Durham as well. Like, and that was in front of nobody but scouts. So the fact that he's able to hit line to line with power, everything he hits is hard, and also be a slick glove at second base. The kid's unbelievable.
By the way, let's go ahead and do our PGX Player of the Week. And gentlemen, I guess there'll be no surprise. Guess who it would be? Who do you think it is?
Could it be Connor Norby?
Yes, since we're talking about Connor Norby, I thought that was the perfect time to do our PGX Player of the Week. And by the way, guys, four straight weeks that he's a Player of the Week. And I know, Corey, you were talking to me earlier. Should we just name it the Connor Norby Player of the Week? I mean, change the name of the title.
Yeah, at this point, you might want to consider it. Let me throw out, I mean, Connor deserves this award, and he should just probably have the award named after him at this point. Let me throw out a couple more options for you from this week.
Okay.
Josh Moylan.
Yeah, he was.
Who had a great weekend. And Ben Newton, who had four RBIs this weekend, an RBI and a couple runs scored against Duke as well. So let me throw those guys out there as well to make everyone realize that it's not just number one at the top, even though he is deserving of all the accolades right now. But this week was, especially Tuesday, was very much an all-hands-on-deck sort of effort. And guys like Moylan, guys like Newton really came through in multiple spots this week.
Add it up.
Let's go ahead and do the pitcher of the week. The PGX Pitcher of the Week, and guys, that no surprise there, and that, of course, is none other than we'll do with Carson Wisenhunt. I mean, I think that would be a safe bet. Are you in agreement with our assessment there?
I'll give you that one. Career-high 10 strikeouts for Jay Kuchmaner is not a bad option as well.
And, yeah, he was in the mix.
Yeah, I will you know, I think C.J. Mayhew would be a good one to throw into the discussion as well, and not just what he did Saturday against Charlotte, but how he was able to settle things down against Duke on Tuesday. So, again, you know, there are two pretty obvious candidates for your awards tonight, but there were some options underneath that certainly merit some discussion.
Yeah, and we discuss it. Like, it's not like we say, okay, it's definitely going to be Connor Norby, because I will let everybody know that's the toughest part, is that you have so many great players, Corey, that that's a good problem to have, right? It's not like it's just Connor Norby is the only good player on the team, or that Carson Wisenhunt's the only pitcher on the team.
Yeah, at this point, you almost need to have like a PGX Player of the Game not named Connor Norby, because it's been him for a month running. You know, it's your show. You decide what to do here. But
yeah, we are.
We could be sitting here a week from now.
I was thinking it was three straight weeks.
We'll look at it again. I'll look at it again. Maybe it's three, but I thought it was four. But we'll see. Right. By the way, our good friend Pirate Al chiming in again. 38 years watching Pirate baseball. Never seen a five-tool second baseman. I give in Norby if this continues. He's a no-brainer, first-team All-American.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, he's a – with what he's doing right now, he's a Golden Spikes Award candidate. I mean, he's National Player of the Year stuff right now. We are 15 games in, right. Keeping all of that in mind. But, yeah, he is developed into a five-tool guy. I don't think heading in there were a lot of people who said he might have that potential. But you're right. He is getting on base. He is hitting for power. He is hitting for average. He has speed. He plays great defense. He has become the five-tool guy that, you know, this team was seeking one, but they have one. And now you can't stop the season right now, last year notwithstanding. But with where we sit at this stage of 2021, I wouldn't trade anybody for what Connor Norby's doing, even Kumar Rocker, even some of the best pitchers that are going right now. This kid is truly something to watch.
No doubt. Speaking of that, the season stopped a year ago with the team we're going to talk about next. I believe that was, my memory serves me right. You guys were down in Wilmington, right? I want to get your thoughts on that. Then we'll talk about Wilmington coming up and some other stuff. But I want to get your take on the Seahawks, by the way, who swept Appalachian State this weekend. So I know that they're a really good baseball team. And no surprise, we have our D1 preview that people can listen for the state of North Carolina. People can listen to that. They can look in the archives. But we knew Wilmington was going to be a good team coming in.
Yeah, and this matchup is always I tend to hate the cliches, like throw the records out. There's something about this matchup, though, that's just a little bit different even than an ECU-Carolina matchup or a state matchup or a Duke matchup. ECU and UNCW, I think, operate on a similar level in terms of how they recruit, the styles in which their programs operate. And I think the fan bases are nudged up against each other so tightly that there is a true neighborhood rivalry brawl that exists here. So these always come with a added cherry on top of maybe the most fiery contests on the schedule. I think they have questions in their bullpen that the Pirates might be able to exploit. Cincinnati hung a ton of runs on them 2 weekends ago in a 4-game series, and Cincinnati, as of right now, is not very good. So I think they're gettable. I think the Pirates can go into Wilmington and win. That ballpark has played weird to this team over the years. And many, many guys on this year's team certainly recall how last year's game went. The walk-off loss and then getting on the bus and the realization trying to sink in that, oh, wait a minute, this might have been it for a while, and then it was it. That trip to Wilmington last year was the most surreal moment of my broadcasting life. Heading to Wilmington was already strange because Columbia canceled. And so the last half hour of that trip was the team scrambling to find an opponent for that weekend. They found one. They never needed to play him, but they found Rutgers for that weekend. And then they got to the park, and you could tell that that was in their minds that, we don't have an opponent this weekend. And it drifted them away from what the game was at hand. So they played a little sloppy, and it was hard to coach that game, and it was hard to call that game as we were sitting in the booth. And then the walk-off loss turns out to be the final pitch of the season. There are some bad memories from that park and some unfortunate memories from that park. And by and large, when these two teams have collided, they've also been very weird games, and some very strange things have occurred just in the midst of a 4-hour mess of base runners being thrown out, wild pitches and pickoffs going awry. These two have not always played the cleanest games against each other, but they've certainly played the most passion-filled games against each other. And so that leads to a Wednesday night that will be rather unpredictable.
No doubt about it, Corey. And do you think that, I know what Coach Godwin will say, coach speak, last year was last year, but how much of all that mess that was going off the diamond, off the field, and then you have the fact that the walk-off, the whole emotional thing, it's UNCW. You got to know these guys, they're smart. These guys know about the game last year. Don't you think that left them with a bad taste in their mouth?
It might. I mean, they might use it as kind of the quote-unquote drive, the motivation to just get on their best foot right away on Wednesday, because I remember distinctly that, you know, the season got bagged on a Thursday after they played on a Wednesday night. And then that following Monday, one of the first things I see when I open up Twitter is that UNCW baseball Twitter account, they're re-airing Wednesday night's game on their social media account. Like, hey, remember this great moment of our season came to an end, as it turned out. And so I have no doubt in my mind that most of those guys are aware of how things went last year and might be using that to try and return serve here on Wednesday. When push comes to shove, this is, even though not a lot has changed from 2020 to 2021, this feels like a different team than the one that went into Wilmington a year ago. And Wilmington has a different team than the one that we saw a season ago. And so once the game gets going, that will be out the window. But heading into this game and knowing that there are plenty of people here in this area that are talking about this, like you and I are talking about this right now, there's no question that there will be at least a little bit of added fuel going down there on Wednesday to try and put together their best effort so far this year.
And let's go to now Johnny Gardner, a friend of the show. He has a comment for you talking about the catcher. Newton says, Newton's progression has been impressive, confident at the plate, and a great defensive play today to keep the ball in front of him.
Yeah, that was, I want to say, I'm looking at the book now, I want to say that was in the seventh with the tying run at the plate. Yeah, he was able to stab the glove out there and knock it down the first baseline. That's when Colmore was pitching. And he was already being looked at by this coaching staff as a great defensive catcher, but they knew that there was more in his bat than I think he realized. And sitting down with Coach Godwin before the Appalachian series, when he really broke out, and he said, "We're still working with Ben on making him realize how good he is." And that's no slight on what Ben Newton is as a person, but I think he knows he's very good. I think that the coaching staff is trying to make him realize that, yeah, right now he's the number two catcher on this team, but there are dozens of programs around the country that need him as a number one guy. And that's how I think it's starting to unlock for him, that whether he's behind the plate like today or whether he's the DH like he has been the last couple of games, he's realized what he can do. And to get another lefty bat in this lineup, and one that's gone opposite way quite a bit here as well, and not trying to do too much. He had a big base hit on Friday, started the score here today. These are things that are hard to really get through to guys this quickly. And this is kind of what we saw from Ben last March before the season shut down. We're seeing it again. And now the key will be whether or not he's able to keep up this level of play. Because if he is, and he has the talent to do so, then a deep team gets one position deeper. And that's, I mean, we opened the show by saying just how exciting it is to see what this team's doing right now. Getting like Ben Newton to do what he's been doing and give Cadell a day off defensively and lengthen the lineup. I mean, just it's hard not to just kind of smile and think about, all right, yeah, this team's really doesn't have a weak spot right now. And that Ben Newton is providing this additional punch.
No doubt. By the way, our great show, Extra Innings, brought to you by Next Level Training Center. You can go to nextleveltc.com. Call them 252-756-NEXT. And, of course, they have a great Facebook page. A lot of great they're very active on their Facebook page, so make sure that you check it out there. Corey, I mean, the season seems to be going so fast, but for the weekend you have Illinois State. What do you think about them?
They're perennially a pretty good program. They've had a little bit of up and down to start this year. So I think either way you slice it, there is a program that there's some pedigree there with the Redbirds. They have had to battle the usual Northern teams traveling around to start off their year. So they've also played a very good schedule to start off this year. So I don't think there will be any sort of overlooking them. This coaching staff does a good job of getting guys to focus in on their opponent at hand and not look forward. So the Illinois State record isn't inspiring at the moment. The schedule that they played is very worth the attention. And so that will catch their eyes heading into this weekend once they get past Wilmington.
Yeah, Illinois State, I remember, had a little bit of a little bit of buzz around them in the preseason, wasn't there?
Yeah, and remember 2 years ago, the Redbirds were walk-off loss to Louisville away from being the Super Regional and coming to Greenville. They're 2 years removed from that. They had Louisville in an elimination game, and then they dropped the final two games of that regional in Louisville and lost in a walk-off in Game 7. So
yeah,
the Pirates were that close to not just seeing Illinois State 2 years ago, but hosting them for a Super Regional. So this is a program that is – you know, flies under the radar because they're in the Missouri Valley and where they play, but this is no slouch, even with their record this year.
Yeah, we owe them a sweep for not taking care of business in Louisville.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's okay to hold that resentment, I think.
Absolutely.
We got another comment. If you have a comment or question, you can put it up for Corey. Very active tonight. Appreciate that. You can simply, if you're watching live on Facebook, our YouTube channel, or Twitter, put in the comments. And right now from Facebook, we have one for Doug Groom. Thank you, Doug. He says, Corey is Ryder the number one precarious situation closer. He is so calm and comes through dispensable.
I think you mean indispensable.
Indispensable, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's see. Is Ryder the go-to guy in terms of a precarious closing situation? I would say with hesitance, no. Because I think this team has three or four guys they could believe they can go to in spots like that. He came on to finish out the Duke game, which wasn't a save, but it felt precarious. That game just felt weird the whole day. And then he finished out today's game pretty calmly. But we've seen CJ Mayhew rack up a couple saves already. Cam Gilmore has a couple of saves, and Matt Bridges, he's picked one up this year. So I think those four are kind of the guys you're looking at very back end of a ball game situation. Well, I also remember Gavin Williams got a save Friday in his long relief outing, because he came on when it was a 6-2 game. It became 6-4, and then 7-4 was the final. So he got a save there. But I think this team loves the fact that they can put Ryder out there in a situation like this, because you're right, he is calm, he is close, and by that point, he's well engaged in the game, where the fact that he's walking into a close game, that's not rolling in his head. Like, he already knows the scenario. So having that availability to go along with the firepower of Bridges, the many options that Cam Colmore brings, and of course what CJ Mayhew offers up. This team has never really had a set closer in Cliff Godwin's time. They have four guys right now they think can close and have already.
And that's the thing, is when the things are so deep, you don't want to have one guy, because if you have one guy, the problem with that is if he gets hurt, then you're scrambling around, where the guys throughout the year, they're getting experience, right, Corey?
Yeah, and to get all these guys closing experience come conference play, when you're playing four games in 3 days, you're not going to be able to use the same guy for every game if you're in save situations. And it's also, this is kind of how baseball has transitioned over the last 5-7 years. The term closer is kind of passe by this point. Like, that they're like having a set closer is going out the window by and large, because now it's, all right, say your closer gets blown up, but he's out there the next game. Why is he out there? Well, he's our closer. Like, no, that's just a title you gave him. Who's your best option? And that's what the Pirates do. Who is the best option based on what the margin is, what the type of lineup is, what the conditions are, where you're pitching, how many pitchers have been used. That's what they go by. They don't stamp closer on anyone, just like they really don't stamp starter on anyone right now, or long reliever on anyone. Who are the best options? And that's how the Pirates not only manage their pitching staff, but win games off of it. They're 13-2 for a big reason, and managing what they've done with this pitching staff is probably the biggest of that.
By the way, before I forget, too, I can't believe it's almost the end of the show, and I forgot to mention about going back to Sunday's game, today's game. Matt Bridges today, what a great, great performance by him and getting the win.
Yeah, the pickoff in the fifth was probably the key to the game when you look back at it, taking off Dragom of second base, because that's a call play. Jason Dietrich and Cliff Godwin bring that in from the dugout, and you need everybody on the same page. So Connor Norby sneaking in and getting there for the tag. And then, you know, Bridges coming on, he pitched on Tuesday in Durham, and he took the chain from Mayhew and settled things down. But the pitchers that you saw, the first three pitchers that you saw today, fifth year senior, sixth year senior. And that led to AJ Wilson getting one out and a big one, McCabe at the tying runner at the plate. And then you go to Ryder Giles to just frisbee in a save. The Pirates leaned on their elder statesman today, and Matt Britt, those three names, Smith, Bridges, Colmore, they're the leaders of this whole operation. Like, make no mistake, pitching or otherwise. And so they made it a we lead by example scenario today. When you can get that from those three, and we didn't talk much about Tyler Smith today. I thought he pitched great and he had bad luck against him. When you have those three leading the charge on the final game of a weekend, the results speak for themselves. And that's why the team has won every Sunday game so far this year.
Dave, any question? Yep. Yeah, I was waiting on you. I thought you had something.
I got nothing.
Okay, well, I'll keep going. I was trying to be kind to you and not.
Well, I appreciate it, Dave. But as we spoke before the game, unfortunately, weekend from hell here. So my baseball was very limited.
I saw a little of
all three games.
I want you to know that I appreciate you and that you are a great, great person and a great individual and a great friend.
I appreciate that a lot. I really do. Not adding a lot to the show tonight, but that's okay. I'll be back next.
You're adding more than Bubba.
I don't know. I don't know about that, Corey. Without Bubba, we might not be on the air.
Yeah, he helps. He always just helps us out a lot behind the scenes. So even at Disney, he's helping us out. So appreciate
it. All right, Tower of Terror.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt about it. So. Certainly with everything going on with the team this week, any final thoughts before we let you go? I know we're running out of time.
I thought this weekend was the most impressive weekend of the year so far. Even the bounce back for the finale at Georgia Southern, they looked great almost from the jump against App State. But I think it's a real quality Charlotte team that this club just beat, and they did it in a way where it wasn't as they were outmashing them or that they were, stealing bags all over the place and forcing them in errors. They just straight up out-pitched them. And this was the type of weekend pitching performance top to bottom that I think a lot of people thought that this program could bring in 2021. And I think we saw it in the opening weekend of the year. But this year, this weekend, against this Charlotte club, with their pitching staff, and the fact that they come in with the home run, leaders in the nation, to do it like this, to perform this weekend like they did, I think this is going to be a kind of a bellwether weekend as this year goes along about, they've won seven in a row, and they look good against App State, and they kind of grinded their way out to one at Duke, but this was a start to finish about as solid of a performance in a weekend that I've seen from this program.
No question. What about, before we let you go, another thing too, we were talking pre-show, what about the RPI? I saw like a Facebook, or I think it was Facebook or Twitter, for the RPI being 4. I know you said that we won't have the NCAA like today.
Yeah, the NCAA hasn't released theirs yet. I don't know when that starts, Warren Nolan is a pretty decent resource in terms of, they do their own thing and gauge RPI, and that's used quite a bit around college baseball. Always be careful with Facebook, Dave. Always be careful with Facebook.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
I think, frankly, we're still too early in the year to be looking at that stuff. That where it will come into play is once midweek games are over, where the conference is RPI-wise. So that's a few weeks out. And as we know from recent history, let's get through March. Then we'll start talking about that. The Pirates, they haven't had a lot of road opportunities yet, but they've come through in 3 of their 4 against, you figure Duke will have a good RPI. You figure Georgia Southern might be in that, quad 1 area, or not too far outside of it. Now you have UNCW trip coming up, and then you have a trip to Carolina after that. Then after that, you're relying on conference play to get that boost going. So, I think it's easy to see the last week and a half of how well the team has played and start projecting that far forward. I would hold off on that for now because we don't have the official stuff from the NCAA yet, and we are 15 games into, knock on wood, a 56-game season. So there's a long way to go, but it's hard to deny that the Pirates are certainly playing like one of the best teams in the nation right now.
no doubt, and we'll see how that goes. Corey, are you going to do any movie lines? That was one thing we talked about. I've heard a little bit here and there.
I did one today. And then I usually get queued up that day of a game. But if you have some lines for me, do you have some at the ready?
No, we'll have to text them to you. Maybe we can text them to you.
Well,
you were going to do them or not. But now I know we'll definitely be prepared for next week.
If you send me some my way, I'll work them in. I've only missed one from Spencer Brickhouse so far this year. That came yesterday, actually. I'm almost putting more emphasis on this than calling the game. So, send me some lines, get some fans to send some in, and I will do what I can.
Corey, quick fun question for you, then we'll let you go. Growing up, what was your favorite baseball video game? Was there one on the NES or the Genesis or the Super Nintendo, that you enjoyed most?
Here's the thing. I had a PlayStation growing up.
And wait a minute. How old are you, Corey?
I'm 33. I had Game Boy to PlayStation, so I wasn't in the, I didn't have a Sega Genesis. I wanted a Sega, but I didn't have
No, wait, you're 33. Nintendo. So let me say, how old were you in 92?
I was 5.
Okay. All right. You get a pass.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I didn't play a ton of sports games on my PlayStation. I had a baseball game. I forget what EA MLB game it was, what year it was, but Sean Green of the Dodgers was the cover. Yeah. So that should explain probably the oldness.
In the era you were playing baseball video games, I preferred Ken Griffey Jr. baseball of the N64.
Yeah, see, that I probably would have enjoyed more than the very realistic one I was playing when I was a teenager. So I think it was Nolan Knight for WNCT. He asked me when the virtual games happened last year. You probably spent a lot of time playing games and calling them like while you're playing them. A lot of broadcasts have done that. I never did that when I was growing up. I was playing things like, I was a big fan of Crash Bandicoot. And then I would play a game called Driver, which was like the precursor to Grand Theft Auto. It was much more PG-13 than Grand Theft Auto.
Did you ever do any Army Men Soldiers Heroes on the PS1?
I did not do that, no. I didn't get into shooter games until probably college, when Call of Duty started really taking hold. And I was sitting in the dorm in Milwaukee, and that's what we would do. Sports games. I played a little NHL, EA NHL on the PS2. And I was always the San Jose Sharks for some reason. And it's like the teal. But I never played aside from the one with Sean Green on the cover, legend Sean Green. I didn't play many baseball games.
For some reason in my head, I knew you were younger than me, but I thought your first system would have been a Super Nintendo or a Genesis. But
make no mistake, I wanted a Sega, and I wanted I would play a Super Nintendo all the time at friends' house, and then I really wanted an N64, and I got a PlayStation. So,
arguably, your parents made the right choice there.
Yeah, I mean, I still at times will play Mario Kart 64 or GoldenEye at a couple of friends' places, but no, in terms of like Christmas and the actual game system, PS2 is probably PS and then PS2 are the better options.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. And by the way, you can go to Trade It in Greenville if you're looking for nostalgia, like old systems. You can get a good deal on that, and maybe they'll be a sponsor.
Trade it. You're going with Trade It. Trade It. Oh my God. Don't even get me started.
But anyway, Corey, thank you so much. Good luck to the broadcast on Wednesday night. We'll let you rest and get prepared for the road trip to Wilmington. And hopefully this time, next week, we'll be talking about a road win versus a tough road loss last year. Last year was last year, and hopefully we can do that.
Hopefully we're talking about more games following a game in Wilmington. Yes. Well, I think that would be the first start here for this week. Let's get through a game in Wilmington and play baseball after, please. That's what I would like to see this week.
All right, Corey, and how can people listen to the games and follow you on social media?
Listen to us on 94.3 The Game in Greenville locally on the TuneIn mobile app. Search for East Carolina Baseball. Follow me at Corey Glore on Twitter. That's also where you can find me on Instagram and, you know, Facebook.
All right, sure, Corey, thanks. Good luck this week on the broadcast, and definitely look forward to having you back on next week.
Gentlemen, thank you. And Bubba, if you're still watching, bring back the Dole Whip for me, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Appreciate you, bud. All right. Bye-bye. Bye, guys. Corey Glore there. Appreciating him. Before we go, Kyle, quickly want to remind fans about our great sponsor, PGXGloves.com. They, of course, are sponsoring the PGX Player of the Week and the PGX Pitcher of the Week. And you got to go there. Kyle, I've got to get some softball gloves for my daughter, Mackenzie, the batting gloves. They've got all kinds of cool stuff. And like the golf gloves, like you want, right?
Yeah, for all our golf playing.
We lost Kyle there, it sounds like. But PGXGloves.com has custom baseball gloves, batting gloves, personalized stuff. They have stuff for the youth, football gloves, golf gloves, swag, and so much more. It's founded by a Pirates great third baseman in the Mazie era, Mark Minakazi. Kaz, we appreciate you so much. We got you back, Kyle. There, we got him. By the way, fans, want to remind you also, if you're just joining us, that we have, we haven't mentioned this yet, but want to remind our great fans that we have coming up, we'll have this is really cool. Bubba let me know that we have a bracket contest headed their way, and we're going to have some great prizes. So make sure that you join us for that. And that'll be this week. So make sure you tune in. We've got a lot of great guests coming up. Obviously, we appreciate that. We have a lot of great stuff in our archives. Be sure to check that out. And it's going to be a lot of fun for sure. Coming up, Warner Mind fans, up next for the Pirates will be Wednesday night, as we were talking about, at UNCW with the Seahawks. And then Friday through Sunday, if you're just joining us live on Facebook, YouTube channel, or Twitter, it'll be Friday through Sunday this coming week. Once again, another homestand at Clark LeClair Stadium as we take on Illinois State, and we'll have ESPN Plus. It's going to be fantastic. What a great great deal that's been to have our games on. It's been awesome. So make sure that you guys certainly check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait. I appreciate everybody so much for tuning in tonight. And we do the wrap-up show. We call it Extra Innings. Appreciate Next Level Training Center for all that they do. Trent Britton Company, make sure you give them a call, 252-756-NEXT. 252-756-NEXT is a number, and we're going to have a lot of fun. Can't wait to see you guys next week, and we'll be back on Tuesday night. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to Extra Innings on the Sports Subject. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates!
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate Baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!